Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know Employee Cycle. We are the people dashboard helping all of you HR and people leaders at small and medium companies become more data-driven and make smarter workforce decisions. So let me ask you a question. If there was a way to automate your HR reporting and analytics process, you'll want to know about it, right? Well, look no further because that's exactly what we do. Our people dashboard has pre-built API connectors to the best-in-breed HR systems that you all are using. Systems like Bamboo HR, Namely, Zenefits, Trinet, ADP, Greenhouse, Reflective, 15.5, Office Vibe, you name it. We know you're using a bunch of different systems, yet you would love to have all that data in one place so you could view, track, share, and analyze all your people metrics in one place. Go to employeecycle.com to check it out, learn more, sign up for a demo. We'd love to talk to you about it. Or you can actually sign up for a free trial and get it started today. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today I would like to welcome a very special guest. And so please help me welcome Christina Mosen, VP of People at FiscalNote. And today we're going to discuss how to move employees from work-life balance to work-life integration. Christina, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Christina, welcome!
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me join you today.
Thank you so much for spending your time with me where you could be doing anything else in the world. So, Christina, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Interesting. So, you know, it's funny. I started off actually in wealth management, just really enjoying kind of intellectual challenges, and pretty quickly learned two things. One, that successful companies, it really had so much to do with their people. I found that out through analysis and all the different, you know, work that we did when considering investments. So intellectually, I found that very interesting. And even more importantly, I found that on the day-to-day, I found the most amount of satisfaction by helping colleagues, coworkers, people who reported to me learn and grow and develop. So I felt that actually needing pretty quickly to shift to more of a talent and organization development and HR capacity. I kind of discovered it. I didn't know it immediately until I observed it and recognized the connections. I really believe strongly in leading with our head and our heart.
Got it. Thank you so much for that background. So today we're talking about how to move employees from work-life balance to work-life integration. And anytime we're looking to make this paradigm shift from what most people commonly believe as best practice into this new way of thinking, we really need to talk about where are we now and what's potentially wrong with that. So let's talk about work-life balance. What do you think about it? And what do you think the challenges are when you're trying to provide employees with work-life balance?
Certainly. Well, first, I think work-life balance means something different for everyone. And even for that same person, it might mean something different over time. Right? Maybe they're juggling two jobs at some point or you know, school while working or families while working or training for a marathon while working or anything, right? So I think we have to recognize that each individual has different needs and that each one of us may have different needs over time. The world that we live in is very complicated. It's you know, certainly 2020 of all times, you know, particularly unique changing, unprecedented. So we also need to be able to build our resilience. Each and one of us and every single company does need to consider how are we really empowering and enabling our people to be successful in work and at home.
Got it. So you said work-life balance can be different based off of where you are in life. What are some of the examples and things that could happen in your life that would totally alter and change what work-life balance means to an employee?
Certainly. So sometimes it might be almost like, say, normal cycles, you know, early career, mid-career, later career. Maybe it's about having family. Maybe it's about moving cities. Maybe you're moving to different locations. Maybe your health or a family member's health may come into you know, a challenge at some point. So some things may be somewhat kind of planful, and some things might be more of a unexpected. And we have to be able to manage for all of those things. So I think that over time, that can change in numerous ways. I think, you know, early on, maybe you're even working two jobs or trying to get your foot in the door. Maybe people have had interruptions in their career having to do with the economy, or as I mentioned, geography, like a move, or health, and perhaps trying to get back on track. Maybe they're even doing a career transition, and they're thinking, how do I transition from this kind of career path to another? Am I taking, in fact, a temporary position, a part-time position, in order to kind of break into a new field or to juggle the life that I currently have, right? There's kind of return to work programs, things like that. So I think it really can take a number of different avenues for each one of us, some of them planned and some of them, you know, really more unplanned.
And because companies are really focusing on work-life balance in the current state, how are companies going about identifying where employees are in those different stages to even try to help employees find work-life balance in the first place? And how much responsibility should be on the employer to help employees find work-life balance?
Great questions. So certainly, I can't represent every organization. Certainly, however, I can certainly speak from experience, either firsthand or also by speaking with a number of other, you know, HR leaders and leaders in other organizations. So I think it depends a little bit on every company, every industry, certainly in terms of how they're addressing. Something that we've found successful and definitely part of our approach is not to kind of sit behind a wall and make assumptions. It really is about speaking with and being a part of the conversations with all of our employees. We're a technology organization. It's not odd for us to be on Slack channels that we're using even more so, or GChat, and every, you know, job function and team may be using different channels. So we're using all those channels to come together. We're using Zoom and Google Hangout and everything, as so many companies are. So really making sure that we're connecting with each other, kind of almost replacing like the water cooler conversations that would happen organically in person. We're replacing those with, you know, let's do that online. Let's have a virtual coffee online. So really staying connected, kind of crowdsourcing ideas. So we might put something out on Slack. Hey, how have you been able to balance XYZ? How are you making sure that you're not balancing too much Zoom time? Right? Maybe you've decided that you're going to take the next call not on Zoom per se, or not on video, but you're going to go for a walk while listening to it. So there's a number of ways in which we really, you know, continue to kind of engage all team members and saying what's worked for you, what hasn't worked for you. We're also, as an organization, to your point on obligation, I think number one, it's the right thing to do. So we should be doing it, engaging everybody, sharing best practices that we've learned ourselves internally, sharing best practices that we've researched and found and from external resources, connecting our employees with things that are most important to them. Sometimes it's about connecting them with our employee assistance program. Maybe it's about better connecting them with, you know, virtual doctors and such. Maybe it's about team happy hour, virtual happy hour, or we've done our hackathons, which we'll often do, or a virtual all hands meeting for 400 plus employees around the globe. We simply do that online. So we're really trying to replicate some of the similar experiences, but in a virtual environment, and creating new channels and new resources to address new needs.
You mentioned crowdsourcing what's going on with employees so that you have a better understanding of how you can help them with work-life balance. Is that responsibility purely on the managers? And is this done through one-on-ones and manager-employee communication? Is this more of the responsibility of HR doing this company-wide through surveys? And does that break at a certain employee headcount? Or is it really a responsibility that's shared between HR managers and other individuals who may be responsible for making this happen?
That's a great question. I love it. And, you know, we tend to think about shared leadership. So I think that our responsibility as leaders and as HR leaders, too, is to maybe set the example, maybe to invite people to create the environment that allows for that. So whether we create the environment that allows for people to kind of speak up with ideas or questions or suggestions, is to do several things. One, maybe simply having the technology in place, right, that allows for that. Seeking ways to kind of engage people to do that. Like we started off right off the bat saying, okay, this is new to all of us. How's it working for you? What have you found out? What's been helpful for you kind of juggling your day? How are you drawing boundaries or turning off your computer in the evening? And then really that set the tone for a lot of people just kind of jumping in with what worked for them. And that sparked conversations more broadly. Some people like to do that in a broader public, you know, kind of format, you know, with a lot of people on a Slack channel. Some will feel more comfortable in a one-to-one. But certainly I think it's incumbent upon all of us to be able to interact with each other, to support each other, to offer ideas and suggestions in ways that are most relevant and personal to us. But to answer your question, I think from an employer standpoint, it's to help set the example. It's to be able to help create the environment that allows all of us to be able to interact in this way.
So now I want to talk about your issues with the term and concept around work-life balance. In 2020, it seems like we're just getting to the point where companies are barely scratching the surface of trying to get work-life balance right. But from our previous conversation, you think that we should already be moving to work-life integration. So what are the problems and the challenges that you see around trying to help employees create work-life balance?
So, you know, the phrase that's been around, of course, has been life-work balance. And I think it's an interesting thought process to think about the life-work integration, which is, I think the distinction between the two really is about, is there a hard line between these two parts of our lives? And I'd like to think that there's a little bit more of a, to the point of the phrase, integration. There's several things with that. I think right off the bat, I think we need to recognize that there's kind of a need and opportunity for life-work integration. The need is several fold, right? We are all juggling many, many parts of our lives in 2020 more than ever. But even prior to that, we have it's a global, fast-paced environment that we all live in. There are so many demands for all of our employees, from our communities and our neighborhoods and the workplace. So I think we have to recognize it's a very complicated world. We have many obligations and interests that each one of us may have. So I think there's a need for that. There's also an opportunity, right? We have now things that we did not have in previous years or previous decades. We have technology that enables us to connect virtually. We have a significantly more mobile just community, not even just the workplace. So I think there's opportunities that we didn't have before where there is kind of a blending of, there's an integration of who we're speaking with about and what we're speaking about. There's also, many times if you do what you love, you're not necessarily always looking for that hard line sometimes. And then likewise, we just have different interests that we need to be able to, and obligations at different times we need to be able to kind of balance. If I'm at a doctor's appointment, but I, can send a little note about something, I don't feel like I have to have this hard line. I have to like clock every hour. And there's more of a kind of a trust and fluidity between these different aspects of my life.
That's really interesting. And when you use the word fluidity, it makes me think about how so many HR leaders now are trying to help employees create fluid and flexible schedules, especially if they have children and they don't know if their children are going to be homeschooled or virtual school or actually in person. With that being said, one of the things that I've heard from a lot of other HR and people leaders on previous interviews is that as they're thinking about work-life balance, work-life integration, one of the biggest problems in the areas where they're struggling is trying to help employees turn off. And because they're at home, a lot of people, they may not know where that line is to actually stop working, even if the employer is saying, take a break or try to create some boundaries. So when you're talking about work-life integration, how do you actually help the employee figure out how to integrate the two, but at the same time, it still seems like that word balance needs to be there? Or is it purely not about balance and it's more about prioritization?
Certainly. And I think that to your point, we still need boundaries, right? We still need to be able to kind of shut down. We need to be able to kind of shut down our computer, change, get away from the desk, go outside, things like that, right? And these things are tested all the more right now because you really don't have such a divide sometimes. You're not compartmentalizing aspects of your life. So, you know, to think that life-work integration is, you know, this, you know, perfect world, that there's this wonderful, glorious utopia, we don't want to be naive to that, right? I think there's a couple of things that go into that. One, life-work integration, I think part of that simply means to not be worried or nervous necessarily about if you're on a video call and a child walks by in the background, or your dog barks, or the Amazon delivery comes. Right. Once upon a time, we might have been extremely embarrassed by that. And don't get me wrong, some of us still are. We might apologize a little bit for it. But we're actually showing that we're humans. It's actually an opportunity to have a peek into each other's lives, to increase some awareness and sensitivity. I think this is phenomenal from like a DEI standpoint, to say, like, yeah, I'm a human outside of work. And that's okay. And that's good. I'm not solely the person behind the email. I'm not solely the person that's delivering on this work product, but in fact, I'm a human behind this. So I think in many ways, that's what life work integration is about too, is that we are able to become much more aware of each other, much more sensitive and familiar to the different aspects of what makes each one of us human. So it really is in support of the whole person. So that's one aspect. The other aspect, to your point, is we still do need to shut down and step away. So life work integration does, we still need to compartmentalize. And I'm not saying I've personally, you know, mastered this either, but you do need to compartmentalize. One of the things that we've crowdsourced a lot from a lot of our team members, and we've shared with many communities, you know, even my own kind of neighborhood at home, not even just work, is how do you? So some people may start their day by, you know, going for a walk or working out or saying, I'm going to take my team stand up while walking the dog rather than sitting in front of the camera. I may have these different routines that start the day or end the day. We have more people working out in the middle of the day than they used to. It breaks up the day. Also, they don't have to worry about the whole kind of shower, gym, pack the bag in the office thing. Right? So really being creative and thinking, how do we have some of these stop start times, maybe these rituals or routines that allow us to step away from the day, set some boundaries that we do have a chance to compartmentalize. You do have to shut off your computer. You do have to shut off your mobile phone, step away from the email, and that we support each other in that. So I think many people I've seen have been able to support each other. Like, why are you online? You know, in a joking, supportive manner. And being clear and blocking your calendar in a different way. And in fact, one thing that I think is interesting, our work calendars are pretty open. You can see, you might block some meetings as private for the most part, that you get to kind of see what people are doing. And that's in it, just in a you know, inclusive, transparent way. But I see on there walking the dog, having lunch, talking with a friend, calling grandma, right? And I think that's wonderful because we're demonstrating that we are humans. We do need to do these things that help us live our lives inside and outside of work.
You mentioned work-life integration, providing the ability for someone to have their pet, spouse, kid, something happen in the background or popping up in the background and potentially saying sorry, but letting it be okay. And I have a question about apologizing for it. There was a blog post, I can't remember how long ago I read it, but I think it was titled Stop Apologizing at Work.
Yes.
And the entire article was around, if you keep apologizing at work, the things that you're apologizing for, I hope I'm getting this right, the things that you're apologizing for never become normalized. So I'm curious, should there be, and is this, this is interesting to me, should there be some type of no apology rule for things that happen in the background? Because if you keep apologizing for, like, oh, so sorry that my son walked past, or oh, so sorry that my dog was barking, then it remains taboo and it never becomes normalized.
That's a great point. I mean, there's two things with that. One, one of the things that I've found is that it's usually the person that had the background noise or something or distraction that seems to be more concerned than the others. So they might want to start to apologize, but in fact, we should encourage them, to your point, not to, right? In fact, you know, I've had maybe a child walk by and say, like, hey, pop over and say hi, right? So let's embrace this. But I do find that, and then also sometimes we'll have somebody who says, I'm so sorry. I'm like, bring the child in, like have him sit on your lap as we're chatting. That's okay. So I think we all create the environment that says it's okay. It's a huge part of your life. We love it. one of the things that I did on my team, a team meeting not that long ago, is since we are having a team meeting and we are in the benefit of our own homes right there, we did a little show and share. Let's literally just pick something in our background or some part of our life and show it. It's super convenient. It's a part of our lives. It's something that, you know, you're sharing more with, you know, fun or pride or excitement or quirkiness, right? But I think you're absolutely right not to actually apologize. I think people are tempted to apologize. You might start off apologizing, but in fact, just because it's a new habit, but in fact, we should be encouraging and creating the environment where that is 1,000% acceptable. There's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, welcoming it.
Awesome. And then lastly, I want to end this with you sharing with the audience one thing that they should remember if they don't remember anything else that they should take away from this interview.
Okay, one thing. I think it's really thinking about the whole person, ourselves and others, really recognizing that we have many interests and obligations in our lives, and to be able to really recognize the whole person, not that person just on the other side of the email, not just the person on the other side of the video call, but in fact, there's a whole person you're working with. And having a chance to understand and to empathize with what their struggles may be in some ways and what some of their celebrations may be. So recognize what are people's struggles and what are people's celebrations is a great way to kind of get to know each other, give each other space and permission, for lack of a better word, to be that whole person. And to your point, to not apologize for the background noise, but in fact, embrace it.
Christina, thank you so much for being such an awesome podcast guest and for sharing so much wisdom, knowledge, and experience on this topic that I'm sure so many HR and people leaders will find super valuable. So thank you for being such an awesome guest on the show.
Woo! Christina!
Thank you so much, Bruce. It's a pleasure.
So where can people find you and Fiscal Note online?
Absolutely. So fiscalnote.com, certainly check out our website. We're on LinkedIn and Twitter and elsewhere. Certainly check us out, please do. I'm on LinkedIn as well and happy to connect with anybody that would like to have a chat.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include all of that info in the show notes. So for everyone listening out there, if you enjoyed this episode as much as Christina and I did making it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes because it shows that we're providing great content. Also, if this is the very first time you're listening to one of our episodes and you came here because you're either already a huge super fan of Christina and you just had to hear what she was going to say, or you thought that this topic was super compelling, but now you're hungry for more because you really like this concept, you like these podcasts, and for some reason you can stand the sound of my voice, then please subscribe to our Employee Cycle podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major podcast players. And we would also encourage you to go to employeecycle.com and sign up for our newsletter so you'll never miss an awesome podcast episode again. And last but not least, all of you amazing HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.